focus on water resiliency. What's the plan? Good planning and intentional conservation efforts have prepared Tucson, Arizona for drought, climate change, or shortage on the Colorado River. Tim Tamuer, the director of Tucson Water, knows that the buck stops with him when it comes to fulfilling the City of Tucson's Water Department's mission, which is to ensure that their customers receive high-quality water and excellent service in a safe, reliable, efficient, and environmentally responsible manner every single day. Stay with me as we dive a bit deeper with Tim about what it means to be water resilient and touch on a myriad of other interesting topics, including diversification of water sources, regional water management partnering, augmentation, and remediation. We've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. Hi, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we're going down to earth about water. And before the questions start rolling off my tongue, I'd like to give a sincere thanks to the sponsor of this show and a valued partner of and supporter of Mrs. Green's World Platform, Tucson Water. As I said, they deliver safe, clean, and high-quality water that meets state and federal regulation. And this utility also voluntarily monitors the water system for hundreds of contaminants that are not regulated by federal, state, and local governments. And trust me when I say that they are working hard to prepare for our future. And as a 43-year Tucson resident, I can attest to the fact that I have received safe, reliable water every day since the day I moved here. So, Tim, it's great to have you.
Thank you for having me here.
And I'm just going to do one quick tip that we have from another partner on TEP, and I think it's very relevant. It's about water. 80 to 85% of the energy involved in washing clothes is used to heat the water. Switching your temperature from hot to warm can cut the energy use in half. Now, I want to put in my own personal note, we wash our clothes in cold water because I did a lot of research and it gets it just as clean as warm water. So why not use cold? It cleans them. Trust me. Try it. So thank you, TEP, for that tip. Tim, it's great to have you back in studio with me, and thanks for being here. And I'm going to start with the question that you are asked the most. When is Tucson going to run out of water? And I imagine that your response is, and I've read it, that you've said this, Tucson really is one of the most water-resilient cities in the Western United States. When you say that to people, do they say, what, really? Or do you have to go into more explanation?
Thank you for that. And we certainly almost always have to go into more explanation because I think people intuitively would feel that Tucson being located in the Sonoran Desert, that water shortages or water stress must be a major issue for us. And it's actually more, it's just a way of existing in the desert. We've never been water rich. In the traditional sense. So we've always lived in embracing the desert environment and knowing that we have to take a lot of actions on our own to make sure that we're secure for the future. So it always leads to an entertaining conversation.
I'm sure it does. And I love having this partnership because I know a lot. And I just say to people, I have a very short answer. Trust me, you don't have anything to worry about.
That's right.
The way I get in through that conversation. But you have outlined very clearly 8 factors that support your assertion, that make us water resilient, and which should assuage people's fear. And what I'd like to do is really go through them one at a time, starting with conservation.
That sounds great. And it always should begin with conservation. If Tucson's known for any particular one thing that we do very well in water management, it would be our conservation ethic as a community. This is something, it's not the utility that does this. It's all the customers of the utility. It's how they treat, honor, and respect water. And we've brought our water usage rate actually down, even though we as a community have grown by 200,000 people since the mid-1980s, and we have a much larger economy than we did in the 1980s. We use the same amount of potable water as we did during the mid-1980s, and that's a function of conservation and good water ethic.
And what a tribute to the customers and to the businesses and to the people in Tucson that they are taking this seriously. And one of my favorite phrases is water, use it wisely. It's our most precious resource. So that I think that's a tribute to leadership and to participation on the part of the people that live here. It's great.
Absolutely.
Now, a more complicated one, which you get to help figure out where you sit, is the diversification of our water sources. So tell us about that complicated set of partners.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we learned early on as a community is that we need to diversify our water supply, where our water comes from. For decades, Tucson got all of its water from the local groundwater. And while there is a lot of local groundwater, and historically there was even more of it, and it's actually very high-quality water, we were overusing it. We were using it at a rate that's faster than nature can replenish it, which meant that we had declining water levels in the groundwater. We were even starting to measure land subsidence at the surface of the ground. And so we initiated a number of efforts in order to diversify our water supplies. So that water supply diversification adds resilience, because now you have multiple sources to draw from. And if you have stress on one of those resources, for example, we now use a lot of water from the Colorado River. We know the Colorado River is undergoing a long-term drought. So if and when that became curtailed or reduced, we have other resources to draw from. But it's having that diversification of Colorado River water, groundwater, recycled water or reclaimed water in Tucson, and actually also our increasing use of local rainwater that gives us that diversity in supply, so we're more resilient.
So that's good when you, like literally watershed management, having ways that we can all do things in our yards and the city and the way the streets are designed to divert some of that water instead of having it just go into the into the waste stream.
That's absolutely correct. For being a community in the middle of the desert, we used to treat some of our water as if it was a waste. It, specifically, the wastewater that comes from our sewer system used to be considered a waste. Now it's one of our most valuable resources. And the rainwater is another one. Our objectives used to be get that water into our streets as fast as we can and then out of the community as fast as we can. Now, with more modern practices, with a more modern view of water supply and green infrastructure, we're able to retain more of it and use it not just coming through your meter to your house, but use it in our community for tree canopy, combating urban heat island, a number of benefits that can accrue from wise use of rainwater.
And even initiatives, like you talk about partnerships that are important, there are good ones here. Like TEP has the one, Trees for You, that really encourages people to plant trees and get some an affordable price. And Trees for Tucson with Tucson Clean and Beautiful. There can't be enough all hands on deck when it comes to planting more trees, which helps with the whole water, you know, the water management. So I see a lot of helpful things. I don't hear a lot about on the news, but I know it's out there. Okay, so what about, tell us about the CAP allocation. That's always, it's interesting to listen to what people think and what they say, and then I like to hear about what you know about our CAP allocation.
Absolutely, and there's certainly a lot of discussion right now around the Central Arizona Project, or CAP, and its relationship to the Colorado River, the almost 20 years worth of drought that system has been experiencing. But it's also important to know that even when times are short or when times are such that there would have to be reductions in use of that resource, it's nice to know where you're positioned within that priority system. And Tucson has what we call a municipal and industrial priority. It's one of the higher priorities in the CAP system. So what that in shorthand, what that means is when shortages begin to be declared or drought reaches the point where they have to cut back on deliveries, Tucson would be one of the last cities or communities or users that would have to reduce its usage because of our high priority. So that gives us a lot of flexibility to be able to plan for the future. Gives us time to adjust to shortages when they occur. But it also goes directly at a concern that many people have, in that we're at the end of the canal. So the CAP canal goes 330 miles.
We're at the bottom of the food chain.
We're at the bottom of the food chain. We're at the end of the line. So there's always this concern that, well, we would be the first to lose our water. And actually, it's quite the opposite. We are amongst the highest priority, along with Tohono O'odham Nation, the cities of Phoenix and Scottsdale and others, and the Gila River Indian community are the main holders of rights that have that very high priority. So the water will make it all the way to us. We're ready for if and when it gets curtailed to us as well, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But we also know that we're not the first to be cut off when the time comes.
And that's comforting, really and truly. And then, of course, and that's part of the diversification, which is you can't just put all your eggs in one basket. Then there's banking. Tell us about banking.
Banking is just what it sounds like. Instead of money that we have in the bank.
I kind of loved it. It's like we're putting water in the bank.
We're putting water in the bank. So we talked a little bit earlier about how we used to be solely reliant on groundwater. And that's because we have these large, plentiful aquifers, these locations in the community that will store water. And they store it indefinitely. They store it for the future. While we were overusing the water that was always already there, in recent times, we've actually been replenishing it. We've been recharging the Colorado River water that's above and beyond our annual demand. We've been purchasing everything we have a right to for in most years, and we store the excess or the additional water for the future. So we've got that stored in the bank right here in our community. And there's actually, we're not the only ones doing that. There's a related concept referred to as firming, which is another agency called the Arizona Water Banking Authority. Again, the word banking comes up. That's a state agency that's been doing the same thing, and they've been storing water in Tucson for Tucson's needs of the future. So we've got water in our own bank, and then we've got kind of a certificate of deposit over there.
Firmed up over there.
With the Arizona Water Banking Authority that we can withdraw in the future as well. The beauty of those supplies are they're not what we call just paper water. They're not just rights on paper without a physical water to go with it. This is physical water that's actually been brought to and stored in the ground in Tucson.
It's not like some of the real banking that money's already gone and somebody else bought it.
So that's right. Not a promissory note.
It's not. I get it. It's really there. You can actually go find it if you wanted to. So here's another one that I think is so important. And it's interesting to me on this journey when I go step out to national conferences and hear those conversations, which I love to do. It feeds my soul. And so many conversations now are about partnering, collaborating, the importance of that, and somewhat of the recognition that not only are we a, you know, local, regional, national community, but a global community. And you're doing some pretty impressive regional water management partnering. Talk to us about some of those things.
That's happening on a number of levels, and it really reflects our acknowledgement that not only are we not in this alone, we don't want to be in this alone. You really, as much as you want to take independent actions to really provide yourself resiliency, it's often through partnerships that you can multiply that. And so some examples are, even locally here in the Tucson area, there are other water providers, the Town of Marana, Oro Valley, Metro Water. We all work together where we interconnect our systems to make sure that we can provide service to one another if need be. We also store water together. We mentioned the banking that Tucson does. Our regional partners also bank with us. And it's not just here south of the Gila River. We have a large water banking and exchange agreement with the city of Phoenix.
And that's so good to hear that. They're so big.
They are
they
so big.
They better be saving
they've got
a lot of water.
A little bit of power.
Right.
And they've got a little bit of water. And
their population doesn't conserve it like we do.
They're doing much better.
That's good. Okay.
So
okay.
They're kind of caught up to where we were 15 years ago. I mean, applauds to them.
But yes, let's bring out the positive.
But they, what they do is, and it's amazing that we got to the point where you have a Phoenix and a Tucson, where Phoenix is actually entrusting some of their water supply to Tucson for us to store it for them in the near term, and then we'll exchange it to them in the future, and it provides benefits to both parties. And it's not just with Phoenix, although the biggest deal is with Phoenix. We also have water stored for the state of Nevada here in Tucson, which we'll be able to exchange to them in the future. So as we draw a bigger circle and we include more partners and more communities in the discussion, we found more ways to provide resiliency to one another. And it's really been quite remarkable.
And is there anything in those contracts about letting us win the NCAA basketball championships?
We're going to have to win that on our own merits.
I'm so kidding. And Chris Avery would be saying, don't be making any jokes about what's in the contracts, because he takes that very seriously.
I moved here in 1999, and I hear that's 2 years too late.
I know, really, I get the whiny voice. Come on, Cats.
We're overdue.
But we don't give up on them. We are Wildcat country. Okay, what about augmentation?
This one is, it's somewhat of a no-brainer. It's that as much water as we have rights to and as much actions we're taking to store it for the future, we're always looking for more. This can come in the form of small scale. There might be people who have water rights that they're looking to sell, or they're selling land.
Got it.
We can be looking for that. It can be, how do we do things like more stormwater harvesting, rainwater harvesting, or it could be even very big scale things like if the state of Arizona is going to invest in a desalination plant, whether it's
unbelievable, yeah, wow. You know,
whether it's groundwater in parts of the state or ocean water with Mexico or California, Tucson will absolutely want to be at that table and be a partner in that, because it could provide yet another water supply to our toolkit and may provide more diversity, more volume, and more partners.
And more to put in the bank.
More to
and
the
I
bank.
Love that. That's something we really want to have in the bank. And what about remediation? Tell us what that means and what it involves.
Remediation, in our case, is taking local groundwater that is contaminated or impaired in some way and actually remediating that water so that it's useful by the community. In Tucson, the main location where we do that is referred to as TARP, or the Tucson Airport Remediation Project. And it's a good thing to do from a number of perspectives. One is, it's terrible that this contamination is in our groundwater in those locations, but if we just leave it there, it's not like it's not going to spread. It could be a harm not only in the past, but also in the future. So we want to do something proactive about it. We want to clean up the groundwater, not only recover that part of the aquifer so it can be useful to us in the future, but in the meantime, remove the contamination that's in that water and then put that water to a beneficial use. The nice thing about that is, in the current state institutional framework, we're able to do that, and we get what we call a remediated groundwater exemption, which means it doesn't count as if we were pumping groundwater from another part.
Right.
They want to incentivize us to do cleanups like that. Unfortunately, there's a sunset on your ability to use remediated groundwater, and so we're actively working with the powers that be to see if we can't do something about that sunset.
So sunset, okay. I know what that means, the end. Okay, what about groundwater as a topic in and of itself? Where are we on that?
So we end where we begin. You know, Tucson became the community it is largely because of its plentiful groundwater. And as I mentioned earlier, we were overusing it for decades. And even though we've moved quite a bit off of groundwater and we actually rely on our other water supplies to meet most of our demand, groundwater has a few important roles into the future. One is, there are always parts of our system where it'll be difficult for us to move water from one location where all of our renewable water comes in everywhere. So we'll always have groundwater production to make sure we have a stable system, we have adequate water pressure for everybody, we provide good service. So there'll always be some groundwater pumping. The key is to pump it at a rate lower than nature, and we replenish it. So that's one. But the larger is that it is our supply that is our backstop against any future impact to our other supplies. So the fact that we've allowed groundwater levels to rise and replenish, and we've banked and firmed water, means that we now have this huge aquifer that's almost full again. It's not
so
quite full,
good.
But it's more full than it was for a while. And that water's available to us in time of need. So it could be, and if we did have a shortage on the Colorado River, that began to impact us, we have a supply to turn to. We also often use the term bridge supply, which means it's a supply that we can use. We know we can't use it at a high rate for a number of years or decades, but we can use it for an extended period of time as we move from one supply to the next supply, or as we recover from an impact to one of our supplies. For example, if there were an earthquake that it disrupted the Central Arizona Project and meant we couldn't deliver that water to Tucson for many months or a year, we have a supply to use to continue to serve the community, and we can use it without negatively impacting the aquifer. And then when we get our other supply back online, we can allow it to recover again. So it really becomes our most versatile. It's actually our largest volume and really the one we want to use least of so that we have plenty of it in time of need.
So recapping that in terms of me, the consumer, it assuages my fear every time I have somebody from your department on here because you go out the door and I say, they've got our backs and it really matters. That being said, the weather, like you said, there are things you can't control. The weather has been extreme. We see it over and over and over. When something comes out, like conversations about the grid going down, it's hard for me to imagine that, but I know it could happen, especially if the grid is overheated or anything catastrophic like that. What happens to water if the grid goes down? Can you paint us a scenario for that?
I certainly can, and it's certainly that an issue that's on our minds, and there's two scales to it and then two time frames to it that I'll talk through. The scale part is energy is a huge part of us moving water, treating it and delivering it and storing it. So certainly a loss of the grid locally would have an impact on us, but we have an ability to manage that for different periods of time depending on the different actions we take. And then the other side of that is it also, even if the local grid is in good shape, but regionally we had an interruption on the CAP grid, that's one that we're well prepared for. If the CAP was not able to deliver water to us for a month or two,
We're okay.
Okay. We would not have to interrupt anything. But locally, what we really rely on is the fact that we store a lot of water at elevation. And by that, I mean we have about 68 reservoirs that are generally on the high points of town. So they're up in the Tucson Mountains. They're up in Dove Mountain. They're up at higher elevations than most of our system. And we store water in those regularly in order to serve the system under gravity. So as long as we have power, we're able to fill those reservoirs, and then it's actually, for the most part, the gravity that's providing the pressure in your pipes. If we lost power or the grid for 1, 2, maybe 3 days, we'd be able to draw off those reservoirs. We would certainly call for people to conserve and be very cautious with their water use because we want to make that stored water last as long as we can. But we certainly have a few days that work with. If it goes beyond that and what we call a black sky event where we have the grid in Tucson might be down for a month, we really are going to be shifting as a community how we deal with that because water will only be one of our issues. The sanitation side and the way the wastewater needs to have flow in it to keep public health protected. You need a water system to do that. You have transportation, you have hospitals, you have a number of needs. So while I'd like to say there's plenty of generators around that we would be withstanding that, certainly the generators we have, we'd help. The help that would come from FEMA would help. But it's really a matter of how do we as a community shelter in place, find ways to provide as much water pressure as we can to as much of the community as we can, and do it in a way that protects public health. Those are things and scenarios that we actually do spend time thinking about, and we actually have local partnerships that meet together, and at least once a year, we go through an exercise where we really practice what would happen if, and it might be something like the grid goes down, and we'll actually meet with Pima County Wastewater, we'll meet with Tucson Electric Power, we'll meet with the police and fire agencies, and we really work through these scenarios to really practice how would we respond.
Got it. And I don't think most people know that. And it's really, there is more fear out there, and we don't want to be about fear. We want to be about educating, and I'm glad that I thought to ask that. And then the other question is, when things come out, like the latest report from the International Panel on Climate Change saying, you know, the report The short version is, and I'm reluctant to use these short headlines, but we basically have 12 years as a planet to dramatically shift a lot, a whole heck of a lot, like basically cut our CO2 emissions dramatically. I'm not seeing a race to that finish line on people's part, but when something comes out like that, this is one of those where I'd like to say, well, what do you, WWTS, what would Tim say? What kind of impact does that have? And my answer would be, let me see if I can, if this is what you'd say, is that that's what all this other nine factors is about. That's what you're preparing for, knowing that the possibilities exist and that the climate is drying out. So a report like that, does it just help heighten awareness, or does it inform you in terms of your plan?
It does a little bit of both. And thank you for answering the question, and you answered it correctly. Is that
how'd I do?
Perfect. Those actions we've already spent this particular episode talking about really are preparing us for the knowns and the unknowns. They're certainly doing a lot to prepare us for whatever the future of climate change has to present. The IPCC report is concerning, and it's something that reinforces our efforts.
Yes, yes.
One of the things that is important to note is that doing what we've been doing is not the least expensive way we could have been serving water to Tucson. It's not the most expensive way, but it's actually a mix of being very efficient, economical, wise use of funding, but also investing and preparedness. And it's because we've been investing in preparedness that we're in such great shape, no matter what the future holds.
Right, right.
But the lesson from the IPCC report, or from a broader conversation about climate change, is that we don't have high confidence in what the future holds. And we need to continue to explore that. We need to engage in that discussion so that we understand not just do we continue doing what we're doing, which is great, but are there additional things we should be doing in order to be even better prepared? And so I was very interested when the report came out. I've actually been independently studying this on my own. You know, I'm a water professional, and climate change has been something that's really just been kind of on the fringe of what I've done.
Right.
Over this past year to 18 months, personally, I've embraced it as a topic I need to know inside and out, and I need to be very well versed in. And so I've read these reports. I've been reading on overshoot and what that means to be as a society if you're living outside the ability of the environment to process your waste or consume, what your needs are.
Right, right.
You're living in danger, and we are doing that as a society. And so what is Tucson Water's role in protecting our community and maybe even contributing to the solutions?
Yeah, it feels like a really good place to be. And one last question. It's almost like it's old news, but it's relevant because it was September, which seems like, you know, about a couple of years ago.
That was a whole election ago.
I mean, it was a whole election ago, exactly. But it was the hot topic of contaminants in the water. And before I ask you the question, I think it was very interesting that the headlines read, "Contaminated water mistakenly sent to thousands of Tucson water customers." And Chris Avery, who was on before you, said something about this that really struck me and makes us so careful at Mrs. Green's World about how we say things. Headlines are everything. And he said, think about the difference between a headline that said contaminated water and or contaminants in the water. And I know, and everybody should know, that our water has things in it. There are contaminants in the water. They are monitored. They are usually far less than the EPA standards. And I know that you care about all aspects of water quality and safety. So what happened and where are we now?
Thank you for that. And it does remind us that the headlines are written for a reason, and then the body of the articles are written with the facts.
So true. And even with our newsletters, the headline will mean if it's opened or not.
That's correct. So we're looking for page clicks here. If you're the Daily Star on this one, what it is there are a new suite of contaminants that are being found in groundwater across the U.S. In fact, across the world, they're called perfluorinated compounds. They are being found in a few locations in Tucson. The difference between what the headline suggests and what reality is that we've been monitoring for them since 2009. We know where we're finding them, and we're taking a number of actions to protect public health. And just because these contaminants are found in our groundwater, that does not mean that the water being served by Tucson Water is unsafe. It's because we're proactively looking for them. We have a number of wells we've turned off. We have a number of ways that we use to either treat or blend water to make sure that, as you stated, the water we're serving is well below any regulatory standard. Or in this case, there are no regulatory standards. What there are health advisories, and we are staying well below those health advisories. So while there's facts in the article, the headline itself was alarming and in my view, incredibly misleading. And as you've read the articles that have come out subsequently, it really goes into detail about how proactive we actually have been, how public health has been protected, but that there's no chasing down that first headline when it comes out. And so it's really a matter of continuing the message about that the water is safe and it has been safe, and the trust that the utility has built up with its community over the years is something we need to be very mindful of and maintain and so that we're protective of public health.
And be careful what you read in news headlines. It's just, you're right, it's to sell, it's to get people to click through, and usually the article itself is not as damning as the headline. It's just something to catch, which is why I stay away from a lot of news. It's a safer place to be. So my closing thoughts are, we'll be focusing quite a bit in the weeks and months to come on raising awareness about the IPCC's climate change latest report, indicating that we have about 12 years to make drastic changes in our world in order to avert severe and even catastrophic impacts of global warming on the planet. We are not about fear, but about education, inspiration, and motivation, as evidenced by this show. So please just remember this. Water is our most precious resource, and we can't live without it, so use it wisely. Tim, it's always a pleasure to have you here, and it seems like the time really flies for me. And just to talk to you all about our December 11th show, cannot wait for it. Grant Reed and Jamie Vandermeer, we're interviewing them literally in Botswana, and they are hysterical, and they'll tell us about what's going on in Botswana in terms of climate change and all of those other things in their training school. And then our friend Christina Paulsgrove from the City of Tucson Department of Environmental Services, 'tis the season to tree cycle. So get ready to tree cycle your tree, not put it in the dump or in the alleyway behind your house, especially if there's any buffalo grass near that. So Tim, once again, thank you, and thanks for all you and your staff do to make sure that we all have safe water.
Thank you for having me.